Hey, welcome back to the Mark Moses Show. And joining me right now here on the phone line to preview a new season of college football, great friend of mine. His name is Joe Lisi, GoForTheTwo.com. My man, how you doing today?
Doing well, about 26 days away from the start of the 2019 season. I can't wait.
Do you like where they're doing that, where it's a week before, where it's Florida and Miami?
I think with this year, the 150th anniversary, it's an anniversary year. We have a special landscape in Orlando with an arch rivalry game between the Gators and Hurricanes. I have no problem with it. And then we have a great battle in Hawaii between Khalil Tate and the Wildcats on the road against Hawaii in that ballgame. Two solid games to kick off week zero. So I'm in favor of that.
I like what you said there, week zero. That's what a lot of people are calling it as well. I like that. All right. We were talking off air about this, where this is going to be my seventh year covering college football in Florida. How about you, my friend? How many years now have we been covering this great sport?
Since 2001, I've been a college football researcher for ABC Sports with the College Football Studios show with the late John Saunders and Terry Bowden. So I've been covering this game at least 18 years and followed it and played it as well. So a long time. I'd say over 35 years of knowledge in the collegiate game.
Can you believe that we're now going to enter, I believe, is it year six with the playoff? That blows my mind.
I know. It's been unreal. It's a crazy landscape, and you see teams like Alabama and Clemson and some even Ohio State that have made it there more than others. I think we're starting to see the top 10 teams in the country pull away from the rest of the pack, but you never know. A team like UCF could crack the playoff in 2019.
It's weird where I looked at the stats. I think nine teams have made the playoffs. That's it. Five have been in the title game. Why do you think there is that? And I know this is a tough question. Why do you think those top 10 teams are breaking away from everyone else?
I just really think it comes down to recruiting, Mark. Some of the better teams, like you mentioned, Alabama and Clemson, recruit better on the interior offense and defensive lines than the skilled players, and that's ultimately where games are won or lost at the collegiate level. On top of the quarterback, we're starting to see the top teams in the nation not only get the best interior offense and defensive linemen, but they're also getting the best quarterbacks now, and that's why we're starting to see a separation in recent years.
Tell me about the job then of Dabo Swinney, because I'm sorry, Clemson was never this much of a mega power as is now.
No, yeah, great point. I mean, the one body of work when you look at Dabo Swinney, let's just look at it since 2015. 40-4 against ACC opponents. Whoa. They were 9-0 against ACC competition last year. Won those nine games by an average margin of victory of 35.8 points per game. They were battle-tested on the road, 8-0, and won those matchups by 30.7 points per game. And it's not just on the offensive side of the ball. They're doing it on the defensive side of the ball. For the last 4 years, Brent Venables has coached up a unit that has averaged 48.7 sacks per season and held opposing offenses over the last 4 years under 30% in terms of third-down defense. When you do that, you're going to win football games consistently in and out of conference.
It's unbelievable. I know I talk about it every day. It's incredible what Clemson has done. Are they your number one team then for 2019?
I think they are for a couple of factors. I mentioned the body of work within the conference, and in my opinion, they do have the best quarterback in college football in Trevor Lawrence that threw for 3,280 yards, 30 touchdowns, and only four interceptions. But here's another statistic that you have to keep in mind. They also have Travis Etienne that averaged 8.1 yards per carry and 24 rushing touchdowns. They have T. Higgins. They have Justin Ross. This is an offense over the last couple of years since 2016. They are 22-0 every time they pound the rock for over 200 yards. They've won the last 2 years by an average margin of victory of 29.8 points per game, and they have one of the weakest ACC schedules for 2019, combined winning percentage of their upcoming opponents, 510%. Their season really hinges week one against Georgia Tech, then the following week against A&M, and then the third week at Syracuse. If they get through that, it's clear sailing to week 14 in Columbia against Jake Bentley and the crew.
Have they and Alabama, and maybe in Oklahoma as well, have they built up so much confidence with the playoff committee that they're okay if they lose a game. Like, that's fine. We're good to go. Is that what's happened with these mega teams?
I think more so with Clemson and Alabama than, let's say, Oklahoma. I think the one caveat for Oklahoma and the Big 12 conference as a whole has been defense. We haven't seen an elite defense or a top 10 defense out of a team coming out of the Big 12 in recent years. So they can ill afford a loss. I think a team like Ohio State possibly can overcome that. They couldn't do it last year when they lost to Purdue on the road. So I would say out of those conferences, the Power Five, I think Clemson, Alabama, and Ohio State can be worthy of possibly an early season loss. But a team like Oklahoma or Texas, I think will be on the outside looking in for 2019.
All right, going back to Alabama. Can they just go 12-0 again? Like, what do you think of their schedule?
Yeah, they can. Here's the thing about, we spoke about Clemson. Alabama over the past 3 years is 26-1 against SEC opponents.
Ugh.
And they won those 26 games by 27.5 points per game. They were 9-0 last year and won their nine games by 29.8 points per game. So there's no reason to think with the weakest SEC schedule in 2019, their combined winning percentage of their upcoming opponents is only 518% compared to the highest in the league, South Carolina. Their combined winning percentage is 644 of all their opponents in 2019. And then when you look at the two teams in the West that could possibly challenge Alabama, you got to go to Texas A&M and LSU. Since 2013, Alabama is 6-0 over A&M and have won those six games by 22.1 points per game, and they've won eight straight over the Tigers by 15 points per game. I think it's clear sailing to the SEC championship for Alabama and Nick Saban.
When does it end? Ever? Like, what? I mean, it's crazy, man. I remember when it was born. It was the title game against Texas. When Colt McCoy got injured, Bama won that title, and they've been the kings of college football. It's incredible. I mean, a decade long, Joe.
It's unreal, Mark, when you think about it. I mean, let's go to this statistic as well. They haven't lost a week one matchup since 2001 in Tuscaloosa against UCLA. I mean, that's how bad they've dominated even week one, and they've won those 17 games by 25.5 points per game. So they beat up on everybody that they played. And, you know, they had a pretty good team when David Shula was there as well. So, you know, it was even prior to Nick Saban getting there for the Alabama Crimson Tide. This has been a dominant team over the last 14 years.
Everyone likes Georgia in the East. Do you like Georgia as well?
I don't. I think Georgia will be a 10-win football team, and I'm a Bulldog fan by heart. Grew up a Herschel Walker fan, so that's not to take away from what the Bulldogs have done last year or the last couple of years under Kirby Smart. But getting back to the SEC championship game, when you have a record in terms of 2019 opponents of 633%, and you look at their November schedule, they face Florida and Jacksonville, then face Missouri off a bye week the following week, then have to travel to the Plains in Auburn. They then get Texas A&M at home and at Georgia Tech. That's going to be very difficult, especially when you look at some of the losses on the offensive side of the ball. Miko Hardman, Riley Ridley are gone. That's going to put a lot of pressure on Jake Fromm. So I'm picking Missouri. Very easy schedule, and I know that they're on probation, but should they win their appeal, this is a team with Kelly Bryant that I think can run the table and steal the East.
Wait a minute. Let's clarify this. So Missouri right now can't go to postseason action, right?
Correct.
But if they win their division, could they go to the SEC title game?
They have to win their appeal. So it'll be during the season. They're appealing this process. But I think when you look at just Missouri's body of work in terms of schedule, 575 winning percentage of their 2019 opponents, they could possibly start the year at 8-0 before they have to face Georgia. And they get Georgia on a bye week the week after Georgia plays in the cocktail party. So that's going to be a very critical game for both teams. And I think they actually got an upgrade with Kelly Bryant over Drew Locke in terms of big game ability and leadership. This could be a team to keep an eye out on in 2019.
Are people not talking about Kelly Bryant? You are, but is the rest of the country not talking about this?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing about Kelly Bryant. I understand arm strength, and I understand he played for Clemson, but he's a battle-tested quarterback that will not be fazed by playing in Columbia in the SEC. That's the first thing. And I have to be honest, I'm one of the believers that never was sold into Drew Lock overall. He might have had all the physical attributes, but I didn't see a marquee win in his career. Now, I know they beat up on Florida last year. It was also the week after Florida got blown out by Georgia in the fourth quarter of that ball game. It was also homecoming weekend for the Gators that the Missouri Tigers came to town. So I think it's an actual upgrade. He brings an added dimension. He's an athletic quarterback that could put pressure on opposing defenses on the perimeter. So that's why I like Missouri, and I love the job that Odom has done on the defensive front seven. They only gave up 126 yards per game last year on the ground.
All right, what do you think of the Gators then, Joe Lisi of GoForTheTwo.com?
Well, I thought they overexceeded expectations last year at 10-3. Dan Mullen did a great job, and as you know, they're one of only two FBS teams that actually play two FCS opponents this year. It's the Gators and Virginia Tech. I think it all starts week number one for them against Miami. I think you're going to get Miami's best effort with Manny Diaz in that ballgame, especially when you look at Miami lost to LSU last year. There's a new regime, Manny Diaz. That's a very tricky game, and more importantly, for recruiting landscape within the state of Florida. But should they run that table and win that ballgame, I think they're an 8-4 team. I think they have some difficult road games. They have to go on the road to LSU. That's going to be a very difficult environment. They also face Auburn as well. So we'll see how that game plays out. But I think they're an 8-4 football team in 2019.
All right, you're not making fans down here. I hope you know that.
You're not.
All right, let's go to Florida State then. Year two, Willie Taggart, what do you think of this football team?
Yeah, definitely he's on the hot seat for 2019. This was a team that really played unenthused last year at 5-7. They lost those seven ball games by 24.1 points per game. But here's a bigger statistic for the Seminoles. Even under Jimbo Fisher, 10 of the last 13 losses for Florida State have come within the conference. They've lost those 10 games by 17.6 points per game. And they had the 126th rushing offense out of 129 teams in FBS last year, with Cam Akers only averaging 88 rushing yards per game. In 6 of the 12, they failed to rush for over 100. They were 1-5 in those ball games and lost those five games by 22.6 points per game. I don't think it gets much better this year. They have one of the hardest ACC schedules of any team within the conference. Combined winning percentage is 636%. I think Blackman is an upgrade over DeAndre Francois. There's no reason why Blackman shouldn't have started after he threw for over 400 in the loss to NC State. I think Taggart made a mistake there, but I think it's a six-win football team in 2019.
How does Taggart keep his job in your eyes then? What does he need to do?
I think he needs to at least get to 7-5, 8-4 this year. He needs to show progression. If he does not do that and Florida State does not make it to a bowl for the second consecutive year after 30 straight bowl appearances, I think he's on the outside looking in for a job in 2020.
When you hire a football coach, in your eyes, do you always say 4 years or so to get his recruiting in? But what about now here in 2019? What do you give a coach where you're like, okay, this guy's doing his job?
It's unfortunate. It's a two-year window. Every team thinks they have the win-now mentality. And I used to be a believer thinking that, you know, you give them 3 or 4 years to set the foundation. I was very happy that, you know, they did that with Willie Taggart at USF when he took over for Skip Holtz, because I wasn't a big believer in what Holtz did after Leavitt. That being said, every team thinks they can win now, and kids transfer. We're seeing it at an alarming rate. Kids just bailing ship. So if kids aren't happy and they don't want to come to school, the window's gone from 4 years down to two. If you can't get it done in the first couple of years, I think you're on the outside looking in.
Here's the thing. If you go back to Dabo Swinney, how long did it take him? 10 years?
Yeah, but we're also talking a decade ago as well. He took over in 2008, 2009 for Tommy Bowden. There's a different landscape then. We're seeing explosive offenses. We're seeing a more wide-open attack, and with that comes different types of expectations at the collegiate level. Now with the implementation of the college football playoffs, it's unfortunate, but every team in the country thinks they have a legitimate shot at a national championship.
It's so crazy. You're absolutely right. All right, UCF, the team that everyone hates in college football. What do you think of them in 2019?
Well, I mean, their season hinges in that week three battle when KJ Costello and the crew come to town. If they can win that battle and run the table like they did last year, whether it be Brandon Wimbush or Mack returns from his ankle injury, they're going to be a team that's going to be talked about. I think that if they dominate Stanford, after their body of work of knocking off Auburn and winning that ball game 2 years ago and then knocking off Pittsburgh last year and playing very well in the Fiesta Bowl against SEC opponent LSU, if they can run the table this year, and there's not that many undefeated teams, I think you got to seriously consider UCF as being one of the teams this year, but it's not going to be easy, as we know. They need to get better in run support against some of the bigger physical offensive lines that they might face in the championship game. So we'll see how it plays out, but always rooting for the Cinderella story.
I talked about this yesterday on my show. The thing about UCF is at least you know who they are, right? Like, I mean, you're up there in New York City. You know what UCF is, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, see, that's key. It's about building the brand, and I think they've done that. Now, would you agree with me that every other fan base hates that they said they were the national champions, right, Joe?
Yeah, I think that I understand it in terms of the branding, but I also understand that when you have teams that play, you know, Power 5 teams and schedules each and every day, and that's not to take away what UCF has done in recent years under Scott Frost and Josh Heupel. So, again, I think we need a balance. What that balance is, I'm not so sure, because I'm really not in favor of expanding the playoffs simply because I believe that the regular season of college football is magical. And if we take away the regular season, I think we'll have a watered-down product the way college basketball is. Mm-hmm. The tournament is great, but the regular season doesn't matter, and I don't like that for college football.
The thing that's kind of weird right now, and I like the playoff as well, what happened during the BCS era was there's only two spots open. So we'd have games late in the year where, like, you know, an Iowa State would upset someone in the top five and they'd rush the field and you're like, that team's out of contention. They're done. They're finished. It's like what I was saying earlier with the playoff, Joe, and I want your take on this. It feels like, we lost, but we're fine. Don't worry about it. I feel like that kind of took away from the regular season.
I agree with you. I think the one thing about college football that really is special and separates itself from every other season is that we come right out week one and there really isn't no margin for error. And with the implementation of the college football playoff, it is a different landscape now where teams can, like Alabama did a couple of years ago, lose to Auburn and still make it into the playoff and win the national championship. So, how it changes in the future, I'm not so sure. I know that conference commissioners have said that they're trying to expand it to eight, but it's not down the horizon. I think that would be negative for college football. I think we need a better voting system or a better balance to include teams like Boise State or UCF in the mix, but expansion is not the answer, in my opinion.
Okay, then. Looking at a schedule, should a Power 5, like, should they just have one cupcake, one subdivision team, and then that's it? Because I think one's enough and that you should play more Power 5s.
I agree. I think I would be all in favor for that. I even think not even scheduling FCS opponents. If every team within the Power 5, and that's the one thing I think about the Big Ten that really stands out for me, is that you look at most of the Big Ten teams over, you know, the top teams, teams like Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, they did not play FCS opponents. Mm-hmm. That's a big critical factor, because when you're playing Power 5 schools or you're playing FBS schools every single week, it's a wear down approach. It wears you down as the season transpires. And if other teams have the ability to play FCS opponents and rest players accordingly, that also factors into championship games and factors into the late season polls.
I think in the SEC, the weekend before Thanksgiving weekend, they all play cupcakes. I think you should completely eliminate that. It's ridiculous. Late November.
This is stupid.
Yeah, I'm with you.
It's stupid.
I agree. I would like to, if you're going to schedule those opponents, schedule them the week after week one, like most of the ACC and Pac-12 schools do, and then that way the conference schedule stays the way it does. If you want to take a bye week, that's fine, but having a conference opponent like that is just a meaningless win that everybody just pads their records with.
No, I agree with you. It's like, oh, we won 10 games. Well, technically, you won 7 real games. That's how I look at it. When you look at the schedule. Real quick, before I let you go, the Miami Hurricanes, what do you think of Manny Diaz as the new coach there?
I think he'll do good. I really do. I picked them at 9-3 overall based off of their strength of schedule. Weakest in the ACC on their half of the division, 466 winning percentage. And I think you're going to see Miami get back to the swag. Now, they didn't show it last year, week one against LSU with Mark Richt, but that was the MO of Richt in Georgia, can never live up to the expectations or win the big ball game. I think you're going to see a more physical team, both offensively and defensively, and a more enthusiastic team under Manny Diaz. I think he'll roll the dice a little bit, especially in year number one, to take chances. Here's the thing about Miami, which is shocking. You talk about the U and talk about some of the better quarterbacks that we've seen, you know, Jim Kelly, Tester Verde, just to name a few, in terms of that that history overall.
Yeah.
Miami only averaged 167 passing yards per game and only threw 4 passing touchdowns in the last 8 games of the year, Mark. That is horrible statistic for Nikosi Perry in that offense last year with an offensive mind in Mark Richt. And 5 of their 6 losses came on the road or on a neutral field site. So they need a different approach and a different effort this year. But when you have 3 players like Quarterman, Pinckney, and Trajan Bandy in the defensive backfield, I think you have a strong foundation. So I look for Miami to rebound. They don't win the Coastal, but they go 9-3 in 2019.
All right, real quick, who are your 4 teams for the playoff?
I went with a majority of the favorites. Unfortunately, I went with Ohio State. I went with Washington, Clemson, and Alabama.
Who do you like for the Heisman?
That's a tough one because I would lean to. I had this conversation with someone over Lawrence strictly for this fact. Alabama passed for over 300 last year in 10 of their 15 games. They were 10-0. And won those 10 games by 34.4 points per game. And when you have wide receivers like Jerry Jeudy, Ruggs, and Jalen Waddle that combined for 159 receptions, 2,904 receiving yards, and 32 rushing receiving touchdowns,
yeah.
I'll take the number 13 over Trevor Lawrence, even though he possibly has the best team and the best upside in the NFL.
I'm rooting for a defensive player. That's what I do every year. Is that cool?
I would love to see it, but what, if Ed Oliver and that crew couldn't do it last year, guys like Rashad Lawrence, Dexter Lawrence,
yeah,
and Christian Wilkins and Cleveland Farrell couldn't win it. What does a defensive player have to do in this day and age? Just like a running back, Jonathan Taylor rushes for 2,000 yards and doesn't get a lick of a Heisman vote, and ETN averaged 8.1 yards per carry. What does a running back have to do to win the trophy in recent years?
Yeah, it's the best quarterback award. That's what it's turned into. I mean, do you ever think we'll see a wide receiver win this award again? I say no.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, here's the thing. If Rondell Moore and Purdue could somehow be 12-0 at the end of the regular season, and he has a season like he did last year, possibly.
Yeah, no, it's great points, man. Okay, before I let you go, what do we need to check out online? Or I know you got books as well for the latest on the new college football season.
Yeah, my college football preview is up on Amazon, the 2019 Go for the Two, the number 2 college football preview. It's also up on my website, gofortheTwo.com. And I'm hosting a radio and TV show out in the Meadowlands on Sports Grid starting at 9 a.m. on Saturdays, August 24th. So check that out as well.
Oh, really? That's coming up. You're a busy man. That's what that is right there. It really is. I'm so ready. We joked off the air. I'm taking a vacation, then we're going straight to the Super Bowl. That's what's going to happen. Unbelievable.
There's nothing better than the football season, Mark. Love talking college football with you.
Hey, I say this all the time. There are 2 seasons, football season and no football season. That's it. We're getting to the good one. Joe, thank you so much for helping. Have a great day, okay, man?
Anytime. Love the show.